Hi, today is August 5th, 2018. This is Mobius Podcast 263. I'm Pat Ogasso, my good friend John Westfall. We've got a whole bunch of miscellaneous stuff to talk about, and the first one has nothing to do with mobile or tech or just stuff we're interested in.
No, but I'd argue there's a large amount of overlap between mobile tech and geek enthusiasts in general for this news.
Yep. And so the news is Patrick Stewart announced that he's going to be in a new Star Trek series on CBS All Access. John, I think you might be a bigger Star Trek fan than I am. And I'm a pretty big Star Trek fan.
Well, I'm a big Next Gen fan, and I've kind of been a little... The only one that I really haven't gotten into, well, two of them, Enterprise and Discovery, I haven't really gotten much into. But this is definitely something that interests me. I've always liked Patrick Stewart's portrayal of Jean-Luc Picard, and I believe that done right, this should be really a fun series to watch. Kind of on par, you know, I think I've mentioned it before on the podcast that I got into watching The Orville this year, which is Seth MacFarlane's kind of homage to Next Gen. And I think if you can capture the Next Gen spirit, then it's going to make for a fun ride. And part of that spirit is that the world is not completely horrible. So hopefully this will not be Patrick Stewart in a dystopian Star Trek world where everything is just...
Like the Mirror down. World.
Exactly.
Or Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I wish there was not this current fascination with everything dystopian, because the spirit of Star Trek in my mind is still one of optimism and not one of pessimism.
I completely agree with you. And I have to say, I love dystopian fiction. I love zombie apocalypse stories. But dark Star Trek, you know, even Deep Space Nine got a little bit too dark for me sometimes.
Yeah, it did. And it was really clear that Deep Space Nine was the first time that you didn't have Gene Roddenberry saying
no.
saying no. And that was sort of the unfortunate thing about everyone that's taken over Star Trek since, is that they... Gene Roddenberry, as was very evidenced by the way that that Star Trek kind of grew up, was not motivated by what would be commercially viable.
No.
And I think
and it wasn't.
It never was.
Yeah.
Become much more commercially viable, unfortunately, since his departure. But it's also much more depressing.
Yeah. So the big question is, are you going to subscribe to CBS All Access just to watch this, whatever this is?
I don't think I will. I think I'll see what the ratings are and what the evaluation
is.
If people like it, then I might look at buying seasons of it on Amazon or on Apple or something like that. But I would subscribe for this.
They haven't said exactly what Captain Jean-Luc Picard is going to be doing this new series. I mean, for all we know, he's going to be at the Federation home for aging Star Trek captains, you know?
You're right. He's just going to be sitting in an armchair and telling stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the rest of the action. He'll be at the beginning and the end of the episodes, bookending it.
You know, because then there was the time I put butter on the forehead of Worf, and it was hilarious.
it'll be like Peter Falk's character in The Princess Bride. So, yeah, that'll definitely be it, which might be interesting to watch, but not exactly what I think a lot of people are hoping for.
Or it'll be, maybe a takeoff on Seinfeld's car thing, you know, or a combination where, you know, they do carpool karaoke with captains.
well, we are fortunate that all the captains are still around. So you could do something.
You could do that. You could do it. All right. Next up is something I bought on Amazon Prime Day last month. And that is and it's a super long name, so hang in there with me. It's the Fire HD 8 tablet with Alexa 8-inch HD display. Not really. 16 gigabytes of storage, black, with special offers. Special offers means it has ads on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It was $50 on Amazon Prime Day, you know? So I thought, well, I'm kind of curious. I want to see what this thing is like. So it's got a quad-core processor, gig and a half of you know, RAM, system memory. Has a micro SD slot, which can take a 256 gigabyte micro SD card, which is kind of interesting. The display is 1280 by 800, so yeah, I guess you could call it HD, kind of 720p HD. I guess so. Yeah, it's 720p. It's not nearly as bright as an iPad. And, you know, I tested that by going outside and looking at it. The iPad is perfectly viewable in the shade during the daytime. This one, kind of viewable. And it came with a six-month free subscription to the Washington Post, which is also owned by Jeff Bezos, as is Amazon. It's pretty good, actually. I like it. I don't know. John, have you ever tried any of these low-cost devices?
Not recently, but I'm not necessarily opposed to them. Yeah. My question is, what is your plan for this device? I mean, granted, it's $50, so you don't have to have a great plan for it.
Well, you know, for whatever reason, it's not. And as a friend of mine asked me when I was talking to him about it at work, he says, "Don't you have an iPad?" And I said, "Yeah, I got like five of them."
Three full what size. What does this world come to? You have five, and I have one.
I have three full size iPads. No, I have four full size iPads. two of which are iPad Pros, and two iPad Minis of various vintages. But the reason I wanted this is, for whatever reason, I wanted a pure consumption device. Hmm. And you know, it's tied to my Amazon Prime account, so you know the Amazon Prime movies are available. It turns out that while it doesn't have the Google App Store, you can't add it, by the way. It's not hard. You don't have to jailbreak it or anything to add the Google App Store. But I chose not to. I chose to just use it natively, so to speak, with the Amazon App Store. You can load on other video viewing apps. I think even Netflix is available, although I haven't tried it yet. Drama Fever, if you're looking for international TV shows and movies, as well as Viki, V-I-K-I, which I think is owned by a Japanese company now, Rakuten. But, so I wanted a pure, you know, consumption device versus my iPads, which tend to be a mixed kind of. I thought it'd be interesting just to have something low cost that, you know, I can knock around. And so far, it's not bad. I kind of like it for, you know, for what it is. You can add other apps. I added an NPR News app. I added Facebook. I think Washington Post, as I mentioned earlier, was already on there with its six-month free whatever. I haven't installed Netflix, as I also mentioned, but I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to just stay with Prime for now on it. And of course, you know, Amazon also owns Audible, so your Audible books are listenable on this. And the other thing I was interested in, although I haven't used it, is that, you know, you notice in the it's super long name. It comes with Alexa built in. Oh, sorry. Alexa, cancel. That was the echo turning itself on. I don't have it turned on right now, but I could talk to it. And you can, you know, dial, although it's not a phone, because the echo can make phone calls now. You can actually make a phone call from it if you really wanted to.
That is one of the echo features that I think people don't realize is as useful as it is that it can, you can dial into it if you, especially if you're an owner of that device, it will automatically pick up. Mm-hmm. So I have used that on occasion when my wife has left her phone on silent and doesn't realize that I'm calling. It's a quick way to connect into the middle of our living space and go, hey, are you there? so that is an Alexa feature that I think is highly underrated. I mean, your usage scenario for the Fire HDA tablet with Alexa, 8-inch HD display, 16 GB, black dash special offers.
Yeah.
Amazon, you really need to. If your own system can be gamed so easily by title tags, then maybe you should fix it. you know, Amazon should not be playing the if you can't beat them, join them tag problem with their own searches. They should just fix the problem.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess I understand that. I have been pretty happy ever since I cut down to just an iPad instead of a bunch of different versions of iPads. So that's why I was curious what your thoughts were.
Yeah, you know, and I really like small devices, right? In fact, as you know, one of my great disappointments is iPad Mini hasn't been updated in, what, over 2 years now? 3 years? Quite a while. So This was kind of my iPad mini upgrade, downgrade, something. I should also mention that the ads, you know, so that it's, it was $50 on sale on Prime Day, not only because it's the low-end device, but because it has ads on it, which isn't bad. If you've ever seen a Kindle with the special offers, you know, slash ads feature on it, it's pretty unobtrusive, and actually sometimes it's kind of interesting. So, you know, no complaints so far. For $50, it's hard to complain, I think. And that's about it.
Well, good health to you as you use your new device.
Yep. Okay, next thing on. Oh, in fact, it's showing an ad. I just put it down. It shows me an ad for introducing Treasure Truck, a new way to shop at Amazon. No idea what that is, but I'll look at it later. Let's see, next up. Oh, this one's kind of interesting for people who travel even infrequently. And this guy at foxnomad.com has a map of wireless passwords from airports and lounges around the world. And he says updated regularly in parens. And you might say, well, why is that interesting? Isn't there free Wi-Fi all over in the very airport? And the answer is no.
Yeah, you obviously don't travel that much if you think that every airport offers free.
Yeah.
A lot of airports do,
yeah,
but not every one of them.
And a lot of the free ones are kind of slow. Whereas the ones in the airport lounges, and by lounges we mean, you know, the United Premier Lounge and the American Airlines Admirals Club and those kind of places, tend to have better Wi-Fi because they have a focused clientele, paying clientele normally. And so these are the passwords of those lounges, even if you're not a member of the Admirals Club or United Premier or whatever. So kind of interesting. The map is, it's in Google Maps, and so you go to the website, and I'll provide a link to the web to this foxnomad.com. It's got a Google Maps that lets you zoom in and click on various airports and various cities around the world. It's pretty fascinating, actually. And the passwords are equally fascinating. okay, next up is, an archive.org, which is also owned by Amazon now, I think. You know, it stores all kinds of stuff. So if you are of a certain age, and you, John, I think are too young, but if you are a certain age, if you are of a certain age, you remember Byte Magazine with great fondness, as I do. And in fact, I was privileged to be part of the Byte reboot, the digital reboot a couple of years ago, which didn't last very long, but it was still fun while it lasted. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Byte Magazine, BYTE. Not all, but 219 issues of Byte Magazine are available in various digital formats from archive.org for free. And, you know, it's really, well, obviously, you know, you might not learn a lot in terms of technology, in terms of, like, you know, well, actually how to program you could. But it serves as a really interesting historical document because unlike some of the other magazines that succeeded it, that came after it, it was a very general purpose computing magazine. It covered everything. Mm-hmm. And of course you can read Jerry Pornell's wonderful Chaos Manor column while you're there. And so it's really a historical document now. And if you want to get a feel for how technology, personal computing technology, developed in the 70s and through the 80s, which was Byte's heyday, it's a really wonderful, wonderful resource. And I encourage people to go take a look at it. It's free, price is right.
In general, archive.org is just a great website.
It is.
So really it's something that I don't think a lot of people think about very often. No. But once you play around on there, I think you realize that it's a really nice treasure trove of history.
Yep, absolutely. And now getting on to the main topic. It's a very personal one to you.
It is, and it's one that I'll leave a bit of detail out of, but I'll focus on the technical part.
Okay.
So last Thursday night, so that was around, I don't know, the 26th or so, I think was the technical date. My wife and I were driving through Louisville, Kentucky, and unfortunately got into a traffic accident.
Okay.
And I jokingly, you know, everyone was fine as far as health-wise, but the two casualties or injuries were my car and my Apple Watch. Now, the Apple Watch, I'm still not sure what exactly happened, but I don't know if the airbag hit my Apple Watch or if my arm flew up and my Apple Watch hit something. All I know is that when I looked down, my Apple Watch screen had fully popped off of the Apple Watch.
Wow.
And it was hanging on by the ribbon cable.
Wow.
Next to the screen. So there were a couple of interesting things I noticed about this. The first was that the watch kept working and connected to my phone until the battery died.
Wow.
So, you know, because I kept feeling what I thought were like phantom vibrations on my hand.
It wasn't
obviously
phantom.
Obviously, I didn't have a screen. It wasn't phantom. When I finally, a couple hours later, had a chance to look at my phone and think about it, I opened up the watch app and the watch was still connected, which I thought was really sort of interesting. I did. I decided when I subsequently got a new watch to make a new watch profile. I didn't restore the previous one, but I guess in theory I could have put it on a charger and done a final backup of the original watch. Next day, the screen did eventually fall off the ribbon cable.
Yeah,
and fell off in a friend's car, which I thought was just lost forever, and they actually found it and returned it to me a few days later. So I still have the screen because it's a pretty useless thing to have. You know, they can't really do much with it at Apple,
right?
With the screen. So I contacted Apple support on Friday night.
I should note, you don't have the Apple Store near you, right? So
no, I do not. Yeah. So this was going to have to be a send-in repair, and I contacted Apple support. I didn't buy Apple Care on this watch. So basically Apple support said, well, you got to pay for the repair. I said, yeah, that's what I kind of figured.
Yeah.
But from there, from that point on, as soon as I paid for the repair, which came out to about, since I had the stainless steel with cellular, it was about $329.
That's not bad, actually.
No, it isn't, considering that it's not really a repair. It's a, they send you a new watch.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I assume the watch they sent me is probably a refurbish, but it came in a nice Apple Watch box and, you know, came
and right the screen through. Is still attached.
Yes, that screen is attached nicely.
Yeah.
So I contacted Apple Support Friday night. When we got home Monday afternoon, the box was already waiting at my door. I popped it into the box, put it in the FedEx drop. FedEx picked it up Monday afternoon. By Tuesday afternoon at the same time, I had a shipping notification for a new watch. And by Thursday at 1 p.m. or, Wednesday at 1 p.m., I had a new watch.
Wow.
So, I, you know, you get what you pay for with Apple. You do pay a bit for their repair service. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot of people who say, well, take it to a third party. It's cheaper. I can't imagine I would have had a quicker experience even if I had a third party shop in town that repaired Apple watches.
Yeah. You certainly wouldn't get a new watch. I mean, a replacement watch.
No. So if you do have something catastrophic happen to your watch, I recommend just bite the bullet, pay Apple's price on it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe consider Apple Care in the future. I don't know if I will or not.
Yeah.
But it was probably the smoothest experience of trying to get back up to normal after a car accident was through just getting my watch back. Because I've worn a watch now for about 6 years. I went through a period of time, like many people in the 2000s, where I just used my phone for my time. And then I started wearing a Pebble when the Pebble smartwatch came out. And I got really used to it. For the 5 days I did not have my watch, I was looking at my wrist a lot. And I also realized how much I socially have changed because I'm not always looking at my phone. You know, I'm used to now putting my phone in my pocket, and I don't take it out that often when other people are around unless I have to reply to something.
Right.
But this, of course, caused me to be checking the time every, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, see where we were at, which meant that I had to bring out my whole phone, which meant that even if I did nothing more than look at the phone, I still, had to disconnect from the conversation. So I definitely recommend, if you've been a naysayer on watches, thinking about them, because they do, I guess, allow for a little bit better social interaction versus having to always pull out your phone to look at what time it is.
Now, would you, there's a little slightly different subject, but do you take calls on your watch, especially since you have an LTE watch?
Here's the irony of it. So when I got the new watch on Wednesday, I activated it on Verizon. Verizon, they, I still am not quite sure if they know what's going on. Because my account still has the old phone number on it, but now it has a new phone number. Thankfully, they both read as Apple Watches, and and Verizon support assures me that the old one will drop off at the end of this billing cycle. But we shall see. When I got it activated, I thought, well, I should test this thing out to make sure it connects to LTE.
Right.
So I turned off my phone, which is really the only sure way to make sure it's connecting to LTE. Turn off Wi-Fi on it, turn off the phone, see what it does. I looked down, it connected up to LTE, and I thought, great, now I can turn the phone back on. Yeah. And before I could do that, I got a phone call from the insurance adjuster.
On your watch.
On my watch. So I took the phone call and talked with that person for about 5 minutes. And they didn't have any trouble listening to me, and I didn't have any trouble making out what they said, but it was one of those moments of, gee, wrong 5 minutes, or else I would have been on my phone for this.
Yeah. I take it you didn't have your AirPods on in either, so you had to hold your watch up to your mouth.
To hold it up Dick Tracy style.
Yeah. Yeah, well, first I want to say I'm glad you and your wife are both okay. Sorry about your car, of course. It didn't have AppleCare, I take it. So.
No, it did not. It'll, you know, but it's a thing. It'll get replaced. And in the meantime, I'm driving a vehicle I actually had in storage, which isn't the best vehicle. It's an older vehicle that I just had never gotten around to getting rid of. So at least I have a vehicle to drive around. The next couple months are going to be find a replacement vehicle and then sell the vehicle that I've been driving for the last week.
Wow. That's an interesting concept of storage. In Hawaii, we don't have enough storage to do such things.
I'm just fortunate that my parents have extra garage bays. So it's sat in one of those for about 10 years.
Wow.
Got used every so often, but the last time it got used was actually a year ago. So it was pretty miraculous that it started up after sitting for a year.
That is miraculous, actually, with the same battery and everything.
Yeah, that's the only thing I might have to replace on it before I sell it will be the battery, because the battery's dead on it. But it's enough to hold a charge and turn the car on. So.
Wow. And so you drove it back from Ohio and
drove it back? Yes, it was a very interesting ride. Because the car also has 247,000 miles on it. So.
Well, I'm glad things are working themselves through their natural order as you go through this process. You know, I just wanted to mention your watch story, especially, is there in the old days, Timex, the watchmaker, used to have these commercials on television. I can't say I've really seen them, but I've seen clips of them in kind of, you know, funniest commercials and things like that. And their tagline was Timex, takes a beating and keeps on ticking, or something like that. And boy, the Apple Watch sure did take a beating.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
That's what it is. Yeah. Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. Your Apple Watch sure took a licking and amazingly kept on ticking. I'm really shocked. Really, really shocked. All right. Well, I should note that John had been traveling. I guess that was part of the travel for your weekend, where we had a hiatus, so we were off 1 week, and I was too lazy to go talk to other friends to see if they wanted to podcast, and so I took a week off from podcasting too, which turned out to be kind of nice. I was just going to mention I guess that's all I want to cover. There's, you know, a couple of weird things going on in the world tech wise, but that's for the Conspiracy Views podcast.
Exactly.
All right then. So this has been Mobile Views Podcast 263. I'm Todd Agosawart, my good friend John Westfall, and we will talk to you next time, hopefully with no mishaps in between.
Very true.